Okay, so we are in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Tet, beginning of Perek Tet, the end of Perek Tet, or Perek Tet, basically the 8th chapter was about the Jewish people asking for a king, and Hashem acquiescing, and that is how Perek Tet ends, that Shmuel says, okay, we're going to do this, and everyone returns to their home. So, Perek Tet begins, Vayhi ish mi Binyamin ushmo Kish ben Aviel ben Tzror ben Bechoras ben Afiach ben Ish Yemini Gibor Chayel. There was a man from Binyamin. His name was Kish, son of Aviel, the son of Tzror, the son of Bechoras, the son of Afiach, the son Ben Ish Yemini, and he was Gibor Chayel. He was very strong. The Malbim here comments that the Navi is enumerating the reasons, the virtues for naming Shaul as the king. So it's saying that he had good yichus. He came from a good line, Kish ben Aviel, and there's actually a Chazal, he says, others quote this also, that Aviel in other places is called Ner, and the reason why he was called Ner, which means light or candle, was because he would light up the dark alleys for people. So he was a man of the people, and so that was the yichus from which Kish came from, and Shaul will be his son, who will be the king. Now, kind of doubles up here. It says that there was a man from Binyamin, and then at the end it says he was an Ish Yemini, which also traditionally means that he was from Binyamin, often that means, like by by Mordechai. Yeah, so I think that's what we have to say over here, that here it would mean, something like that, that he was strong, or his father was strong.
Couldn't it also perhaps mean he was a man of the South?
A man of the South.
Ben Ish Yemini, son of a man of the South. As in Tamon or Yemen.
Right. Right. Yeah, I guess that's possible. And to the David says, just Ratzah Lomar, meaning to say, Ben Adam Gadol, Mi B'nei Binyamin. So Ish means, like the son of an Ish, of a great man. And again, it's repeating Yemini from Binyamin. And he was Gibor Chayel, the father was strong, and that's going to pass on to the son, Shaul, he is also strong. Zilo Hayavain, and this man, Kish, had a son, Ushmo Shaul Bachor Vatov. His name was Shaul, and he was Bachor, and he was Tov. Bachor, to the Sadeh learns, means he was Nivchar B'maisav, like some to be chosen. He was unique in his deeds, and Tov and good in his midos. The Malbim says that Bachor here means like a Bachor, like he was young. But this, and the pasuk is showing that despite his youth, he was Bachor, he was young, but he was Tov. He was really great, despite his young age. He was very mature. And the Malbim talks about how he was, even though he was young, and young people tend to chase after their own desires, they have less control, they're more wild, they're more out there. But Shaul was very mature and very controlled. And he had great meter. The Ein Ish mi B'nei Yisrael Tov Mimenu, and the Navi testifies, there was no man in all of Klal Yisrael that was greater than him. Mishichmo v'malo gavoh mikol ha'am. And then it describes that from his shoulder and up, there was nobody taller than him. Now he was, or as tall as him. So he was a head taller than anyone else. He was a very tall man. So again, enumerating all the unique character traits of Saul, he was physically strong, physically handsome, and built, and also he was a man of exceptional midos and control and maturity, despite being, you know, young. Now, there's an interesting discussion that revolves around Shaul, just in the name of Shaul. So if you remember back by Shmuel, so Shmuel was named Shmuel because the pasuk says, "Shimei Hashem shivyot pihu," because he says, I asked for him from Hashem. Now, that's why I called him Shmuel. So if you're naming him Shmuel because Mei Hashem Sheyotiu, then the Farshim say she should have named him Shaul. He was Shaul. He was asked from Hashem. So why did he name him Shmuel? So he gave some different shots at the time, I think. Not all of them are coming back to me right now. I think the Rabbah just said, you know, the names aren't exact. You know, like, if you look in throughout Tanakh, so you have a name and it kind of relates to the idea, but they're not necessarily have to be exact. It was sort of the idea behind the name, but not, they didn't try to be exact about it. You want to usually explain why, but that's what the Ravag said over there. Now, the Chassam Sofer in a tshuva says, we mentioned this at the time, but the Chassam Sofer says that he's talking about names in general, and this is something that's discussed also in a tshuva from the Mari Asad, Rabbi Yehuda Asad. The question here is that we find another person in Tanakh who was named Shaul. In fact, we find two, which is going to be important. But if you look back, and this is what I was looking for before, to Parshas Vayigash, when it talks about the 70 people who went down to Mitzrayim, so among the names is, in the Bnei Shimon, is someone named Shaul ben HaKenanis. Shaul, the son of the Kenanis. So who was this Shaul ben HaKenanis? So Rashi says that this was the son of Dina. This is a product of Dina and Shem. Now, that's not necessarily, you know, that doesn't tell us who his mother and father was, doesn't tell us much about him. But there's a difference. The Targum Yonasan, I believe it is, comments that he gives a different shot, not necessarily related to what Rashi's saying. He says, why was he called Shaul ben HaKenanis? Because this was Zimri who did a Maisa Kenanis. Zimri, you'll remember from the end of Parshas Korach, was the leader of the tribe of Shimon, who sinned with the Midianite woman and was killed by Pinchas. So he was, and he did a Maisa Kenanis. He did an act of the Kenanis with this woman.
Before.
What was before? That he had this name?
Yeah.
Right. The Torah is already testifying to
who
he is. Right. To who he is. It's telling you now, this is Shaul ben HaKenanis. This is Shaul who did a Maisa HaKenanis. And the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel says it refers to Zimri. So if it refers to Zimri, then Zimri is certainly considered a Rasha. Now we have an idea. Shamer Shayim Yirkar. That the Shlomanov says in Mishlei that the names of Rishayim should rot, that we don't name people after Rishayim. So if Zimri's name was also Shaul, and he was a Rasha, so how could Kish name his son Shaul after a Rasha? So the Sambofa says, yeah.
His real name was Zimri.
I'm not sure, because why was he called Shaul? I mean, it could have just said Zimri ben Akhenaten. Right? Why did it say Shaul? So it seems that was his real name. I don't know why he was also called Zimri. He had two names. You know, we have lots of people in the Torah with more than one name. Right? Everyone gets a new name. So based on this, the Chassam Sofer says, he also refers to another Shaul, which we'll talk about in a moment. But he says, you have this Shaul by Akhenaten, and then you have another Shaul, and he says that, it says in the Sefer Tiv Gittin, that people with the name Shaul, they call them something else. And actually, it's kind of rubbed out here, so I can't see exactly what they call them, but they call them a nickname. And he says, it's certainly for this reason, because this name was the name of Rishayim. And he says, in fact, like we said, that Chana called her son Shmuel, Kimei Hashem She'yotiv, and it would have made more sense for her to call him Shaul, because of the name Shaul, because I asked for him, but says the Chassam Sofer that she didn't call him Shaul for this reason, because he says, "In Safek Etzli, I have no doubt that she was being careful about this idea, not to name him after these Rishayim." So he says, "What about Kish? How could he name his son Shaul?" Just so he says he wasn't careful about it. It was a mistake. He should not have named his son Shaul. He says, look at what happened. Shaul didn't work out in the end. You know, we see he had many merits, but he was unsuccessful at being the king. He had failures, and he says, that, you know, look what happened. Don't name your children after a son. What? We still have people named Shaul today, so we have to wonder why, right? I'm so for saying that it's not a name that people should name. That's why Shmuel, Chana didn't name her son Shmuel, and that's part of what led to, look, you know, Shaul didn't work out in the end, because his name was the name of Rishayim.
I think there's a similar idea with Korah.
Yeah.
One of Esau's grandsons.
Yeah, we do find the name Korah earlier in the Torah, that's true. I don't remember.
Esau is either a son or a grandson.
Uh-huh.
I forget who said it, but
right.
Somebody said that they made a mistake, maybe get Korah, and this led to bad results.
Very good. So as I mentioned, the Ma'ari Asad, Rabbi Yehuda Asad, in his Tshuvos Yehuda Yaaleh, so he also deals with this issue, and he's actually responding to a letter from his son, and his son raised this issue that how could they name him Shaul, if Shaul was the name of Shaul ben Akhenaten, which is Zimri, and his son, I don't have his name here, but the son of Rabbi Yehuda Asad said that, I think it's the son that he's responding to, whoever he's responding to here, said that the Navi, that there's a Medrash that says that he was called Shaul because Malchuso She'ula, Biyado, his reign was only lent to him. It was like a temporary reign. So he was called Shaul because of that. But he wasn't being named after those other Rishayim who were called Shaul. It was because he was only going to have this temporary Malchus. So this is a very hard idea to understand because we're talking about why, when his father names him, what did he have in mind? So that's what the Ma'ari Asad asks on this answer. He says, I don't understand what you mean. At the time that his father named him, he would have known about these Rishayim that are referred to in the Torah, or this Rasha, and so how could he name him that? And he didn't know that he was going to be king and that he was going to have... So it's true, we say that there's Ruach HaKodesh that goes into names, but that's not going to justify how his son can name him after Rasha, because I'm just feeling this, you know. I'm feeling the Ruach HaKodesh that in this instance I should name him this because he's going to have a temporary Malchus. Well, you can't give him the name of Rasha. So He doesn't really understand that answer. But what the Mariasna does say is that we find another Shaul in the Torah. And that Shaul is found back in Parshas Vayishlach at the end. And it's naming the different kings who lived in Edom. And it says, and a bunch of different kings, and it says, Vayama Samla, Vayimloch Tachtav Shaul Me'erchovot Hanar. And Shaul ruled after him. There was a king in the land of Edom named Shaul. Now the Chasam Sofer listed this Shaul in his list of reasons not to name Shaul. Now this was a king of Edom. Shaul Yerusha, he's the king of Edom, right? That's another reason not to choose that name, right? But the Mariah says no. He says that this king was, as he says, they were ruled before the Torah was given. He says they kept the seven mitzvot b'nei Noah, the seven Noahai laws. They were from Chassidei Umos Ha'olam. They were righteous. And that's why it was fit. He has a proof. Because he says that the next king, after Shaul, his name was Hanan. So he says, you know, Hanan, I think what he says is that's a common name. He says you're finding Shubim, many people named Hanan, and in the Gemara, Hanan was a common name. So how can you name Hanan? It must have been that this Hanan was righteous. So if he was righteous, so we could say that the king before him, Shaul, was also righteous. Why not? And so he says that it's true that you're not supposed to name someone for a Rasha. And I agree. I'll give you that Shaul ben Akhnanis, who turned with Zimri, according to Yonatan ben Uziel, was a Rasha, but says the Mari Asad that as long as you have someone else, a tzaddik with that name, so then it's okay. So there's a Rasha and a tzaddik which they both have that name, so you could still name that name, and that's why it was okay to name it. That Kish can name his son Shaul, because there was a tzaddik from among the kings of Edom named Shaul. Now there's a Ha'ara, there's a little note in here that is added in by the son of the Mari Asad, and he says, hold on a second. The Medrash says that it doesn't bring down the whole Medrash, but part of the Medrash compares these kings to a bunch of dogs, which implies that they weren't necessarily, you know, the most upstanding people or right people. Yeah. There's some magic, doesn't quote the whole thing, but that talks about them as a cat shall claw them, like a horde of dogs. So he says, not so fast, you know, Abba. They weren't necessarily tzaddikim. That's his ha'ara.
Claiming that all of them were tzaddikim.
Yeah, they were righteous. They were chassidei umos ha'olam. They kept the seven mitzvot. He says. So what was wrong with them? Doesn't say there was anything wrong with them. So they were righteous people.
Well, I mean, in all these genealogies, amongst it's just like usually there's a run, right? This one, that one, that one, that one. There's a question, you know, what does it all mean? Why is it in the Torah?
Right.
So,
innocent until proven guilty. But the Medrash seems to testify that they were not so upstanding. Okay, so that's a good question. Mari Asad has another answer anyways, he says. He says, oh, nearly. He says, furthermore, it would seem to me that which you can't name after a Rasha, so that comes from a pasuk in Mishle. Shem Rishayim Yirka, the names of Rishayim Shagrat. Who wrote Mishle? Shlomo HaMelech. So he says that it could be that applied from Shlomo HaMelech and on, when he received Mishle from Hashem, Baruch HaKodesh. But before that, this they weren't makpid, it didn't apply, and they would name even after a Rasha. So he says, so then it's fine, even if you tell me that this Shaul, this king of Edom named Shaul, was a Rasha, no problem, because because this only starts after this only starts after the after the time of Shlomo HaMelech, and it did not apply in the time of Hezekiah. So you have here, what we end up with is a machlokas, a dispute between the Ma'ari HaSad, who is justifying the name Shaul, and the Chacham Sofer, who is saying that it was not right to name Shaul, and that's why, you know, look what happened, Shaul didn't work out. And so you're pointing out that some people nowadays do name the name Shaul. So I guess they're going with the opinion of the Ma'ari HaSad, that if Kish would name his son Shaul, a great man, then it's a fit name. You could also, once he did it and named Shaul, so if you accept the svara, the idea of the Ma'ari HaSad, which is that as long as you have a tzaddik named Shaul, so this won't explain how Kish can name his son Shaul, but after the fact, it might explain how we can name Shaul, because once we had a tzaddik named Shaul, so it's true there are Rishayim named Shaul, but once there's a tzaddik named Shaul, so it could be that we could name it after that. And this
is just the same name, the Shushan that was Don's son, the one that the Medrash said, not to us, it's a pet.
I don't think so.
That's spelled with a hey.
That's Hushim.
Yeah.
But it's also just someone, totally different person. So.
Yeah.
So this idea that if there's a Rasha and a Tzaddik by that same name is an idea that's brought up by the Chida in his Sefer Shem HaGedolim. Are you familiar with the Sefer? This is a Sefer of biography. The Chida has an alphabetical, goes in alphabetical order going through all, all the previous, Chida lived, I think, in, I'm not sure, 1700s, 1800s, and he wrote a biography, short biographies of all the preceding Dolim, Achronim, Rishonim. I think he includes even some Amorayim. And it goes in alphabetical order. And then I think, I'm not sure.
Does it include biblical person?
I'm not sure.
I don't think so.
And then he also has a list of Sfarim. And he goes through a list of many different Sfarim and gives short descriptions of what they're about. And interspersed in the Sefer are little discussions and interesting tidbits. So he has a little discussion here about names and naming after a Shaim. So first he brings up an idea from the Mabit. The Mabit says that it's not fit to name people Adam or Noah or Shem or Aver, and we only name people from Avraham and onward. That's what he says. What's that? Right, but the Mabit says that we don't, and that it's not proper. That the name should only start from Avram. The Chida will mention what he means, we don't, that's not missing, even in his time people named people Noah, or
it's not clear why.
Sometimes you love the name Adam, but it's not common. It's not common to have the name Adam, but I have heard it, but it's not necessarily coming from someone who, investigated whether it's proper to name Adam or not. The Chida, the Mabit says that it's not proper to name people before Avram, and the Chida works that, he has suggestions for why. Avram represents the beginning of the nation, and, ideas like that. But in this discussion, so the question comes up, in that same discussion, he talks about the name Eliezer. So Eliezer was the servant of Avram, and Eliezer was Arur, right? He was Turk. So he says, though it's not fit, the person shouldn't name after the name Eliezer. So he says, I think he's writing a letter to someone. I think the Mabit is writing to someone named Eliezer, and he's telling him that it's not right for your name to be Eliezer after Eliezer, the servant of Avram. But he says it's fine because your name is after Eliezer, the son of Moshe. Moshe had a son, Eliezer, and although he didn't live up to take over from Moshe, but he wasn't.
I think
he brings that up. So basically, what he's saying is this idea that as long as you have one person who is proper to name after, then, even though there's two Eliezers, so he says the question is how can Moshe name his son Eliezer? But for you and for us and for everyone named Eliezer, we have a common name of Eliezer. Yeah, and it's a common name, Eliezer. So that's fine because Moshe's son was Eliezer. So he says you could say that he has a couple of different suggestions. He says that it's possible, Esther, that if the name itself connotes something, meaningful and deep, then it's okay. The name Eliezer means that, okay, as much as I say, okay, I'll be Ezri, the God of my father is Ezri, is my help, is my assistant. And so the Russia won't mess up that name, basically. It's a beautiful name. It means Hashem is my help. So
Eliezer, he
ends up saying that it's possible, right, something like that, that just because we don't find necessarily that being cursed is the reason not the name, he does mention that. It may only be like Shamer Shayim Yirkov, the name of a Russia is Tarap, but someone who's cursed, not necessarily. And so he has a number of different suggestions, but either that, right, like the curse, that Eliezer's curse was taken away, or a curse isn't the reason not to name someone, or he has this idea that as long as the name itself is meaningful, then a Russia can't mess it up. It's only in a situation where the name is just, average, whatever, it doesn't have a significant deep meaning, that so then you shouldn't choose that name if it was the name of a Russia. I know someone on this topic of cursing, so I didn't see a discussion about it anywhere yet. But the question is we learned about Ailey, and Ailey is cursed. Can you name a child, should someone name someone Ailey, after Ailey Cohen? So, I haven't seen anything inside, but I do know someone who his father named him Ailey. Aleph Lamed, Ayin Lamed Yud.
Ayin, really?
Yeah, after Ailey Cohen.
Really?
And this person happens to be a Cohen. And someone shortly after that told him that you're not supposed to, I don't know who told him, but someone told him you're not supposed to name your son Ailey because Ailey is cursed. And so he said, okay, and he changed the name. You have to go to, just it's very simple, and you go to the shul, you give a clap, and you say, from here on, his name is no longer Ailey, now his name is, and in this case, he chose Eliyahu. So, what? At least a child. I don't know, you can add a name.
Apple.
Maybe a Guggle can change his own name. I'm not sure. I don't know much about changing names. I know we add names to, but really the idea of, sometimes we add a name when someone's sick, right? So people pick, Raphael, and Chaim, or Chaya. The name that you choose is actually a very little, I don't think it will significance, but that's not the point. The point is that by adding a name, you're changing the person's name fundamentally. And when you change a name, it's supposed to be Mishana or Mazel also, and that's the idea behind it. So by changing it, that's the idea of changing the name. Okay, so if you decide you want to name your son Shaul, seems the minhag is that people do it. But after reading this Psalm Sofer, I don't know how fast I would be
to do a statistical analysis.
There was a recent name in the Saul Katzen Ellenbogen. But it's not the Chicago name. Okay. Fine. Pasuk Gimel. Vatovadna ha'aso no v'kish abishol. And Kish, the father of Saul, lost some donkeys. They were lost him. Vayomer Kish ha'aso v'no. And Kish said to his son Saul, Hasna itcho es achad mehan ha'orim v'kum leich v'kishas ha'aso no. Take with you one of the lads and get up and go and find the donkeys. Vayavor b'har Ephraim, and he went up, he passed over Har Ephraim, Vayavor b'eretz Shalisha, and he passed in the Eretz Shalisha, v'lo maso, and he didn't find them. Vayavor b'eretz Sha'alim, and he passed through this Eretz Sha'alim ba'ayin, and there was no sign of them at all. The Malbim says, v'lo maso, he didn't find them, but he was able to track them. Ba'ayin is like, and there was nothing. There was no sign of them whatsoever. Vayavar b'Eretz Yemini v'lamaso, and then he passed through Eretz Yemini, and again he didn't find them. I guess there was some sign of them. The Malbim says that they may have split up, and some were going here, and one Saul was going one place, and the Nair was going another place to look, and eventually they would meet up. Now, the Malbim also points out that what's going on here is that Hashem is arranging events. In order, what's going to happen is Saul is going to end up meeting Shmuel. And because the events here are kind of out of the norm. So, for example, he says that, first of all, the fact that he asked his son Saul to go look for them instead of just asking his servant was already out of the norm. It would have been normal just to assign the servant to go find them. Secondly, he says the extent that they traveled without giving up to go and find them, they pressed over this mountain and that mountain, and they're like going all around to try to find these donkeys, and they're unsuccessful. But this is all Hashem, you know, arranging events so that they will meet. They'll meet Shmuel. Hema bo b'Eretz Suf. They arrive at Eretz Suf. The Shol Amar Lanaro Asher Imo. And Shol said to the lad, "Lecha v'na shuva. Let's go back. Pen yechzal avi min ha'asonos v'dag lanu. Lest our father give up. You know, forget about the." Stop thinking about the donkeys, and he'll start worrying about us. By now, we've been traveling, he's not going to be worried about the donkeys, he's going to be more worried about us. Saul is concerned for his father, and says we should go back. Vayomer lo, and the lad said to him, Hinei na ish Elokim ba'ir hazot. There is a man of God in this city. Veha ish nichbad, and he's very honorable. Everything that he says comes to pass. Now let's go there. Maybe he'll be able to tell us the way that we put. What does he mean by that? Maybe he'll be able to tell us. Again, this man that we're talking about is Shmuel, the Navi. He says, well, maybe we can go and speak to him and he'll be able to tell us the way that he took. The way that we took. Sorry, what does he mean by that? So the person say that what he meant was that at this point they understood that, like, this is a little bit strange what we did. Like, we don't even fully understand our own actions. But we must have come here for a reason. And maybe if we go to the Navi, he can tell us, he can explain to us the way that we took, what this was all about. Yes.
If I may, Art Scroll translates that perhaps he will tell us Which is our road upon which we should travel.
Right.
Should travel.
Yeah, so they're not, right, they're not doing a direct translation. Because halachnu is the past tense. We went. So that would be,
biblical Hebrew.
No, that's for sure. Even biblical Hebrew. Maybe it's not above in front of the Christian. But, it would say asher yilchu or something like that. Right, if you want to give a pshat reading of it, that's when you have to take it out of the pshat. It would be not exactly as it says it, the pshat would just be, you could tell us, I think the Rosh Mepharshim who learn it more on a simple reading say that he was saying he could tell us about that which we traveled for. That's what they. That's how they read it. He could tell us, right, because the reason what they traveled for was the donkeys. Maybe he could tell us about the reason that we traveled for. I mean, he could tell us where these donkeys are.
So, what are the major difficulties, major halakhic problems? Why do we not have there?
So,
why people not use it even places that have there?
By Yomer Saul. And Saul said, Lenaro, he said to his lad, Dinei Nelik, here we're going to go. Uman of Yibayi, what are we going to bring to the man? Because we've run out of bread, there's no more bread in our vessels, and we don't have any gift to bring the man of God. Ma'itanu, what do we have with us? So, what the Mepharshim tell us is that it wasn't uncommon in those days, and we'll really talk about it more, two Pesukim from now, but if you had a need, so you went to the Navi, to the, we're going to call him a Roe, we're going to see, but there were people with Ruach HaKodesh, and in those days, if you lost something, or you needed advice, so you went to a Navi, and he would, with his Ruach HaKodesh, would guide you. However, there was an expectation that you bring him some kind of payment for his services. And so they thought that Shmuel HaNavi also accepted payment for his services. Of course, we know that Shmuel would not take anything. We talked about that at the end of Parak Zayin, I think it was, where it says that he... the end of Pasuk Parak Tzvav, where it says that he would travel with his home. He wouldn't take anything. He would travel with all his own items. So Shmuel would not take anything. But they thought that in order to get something, you know, get advice from the Navi, they had to bring something. And the lad continued to answer Saul. Vayomer, and he said, here, behold, I have in my hand some money, a quarter of a shekel, and I'll give it to this man of God, and he'll tell us our way, he'll tell us what to do. The next pasuk, I think we'll just start to talk about it now, but we have a more elaborate explanation next week. Because here's a very interesting pasuk and very significant. Rifanim b'Yisrael, in previous times in Israel, Ko Amar Ha'ish B'Lechto L'Drosh Elokim. This is a narration. The narrator, Shmuel HaNavi, wrote Sefer Shmuel. So he is now, you know, inserting, you know, a historical point, which is that previously in Israel, a man who would want to go see, find out something from Hashem, he would say, L'chu v'nelcha ad haroeh. Let's go see the roeh, the seer. Ki la'navi hayom, because now what we call a navi, yikare lefanim haroeh. They would call in those days a roeh, a seer. figure. No, not with Roeh with an I in your shepherd. Roeh with an Aleph is like Leroth, the sea. Yeah, so he is a seer. So, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky has discussing about this, which I'm going to save for next week, but how this is describing like a significant shift in the Mesorah, in the transition, and in how things worked within Klal Yisrael. But just on a more simple level, before without getting into the greater context of it, so the Malbim says that what the Navi wants to put is in certain, what's more Navi is just, he's explaining to us what's going on here. Because what are they doing? They lost the donkey and they're going to go see the Navi? Don't Nevi'im have better things to do? Isn't the Navi's job to, you know, rally the people to do tshuva and to tell them when to go to war and to tell them what they're doing wrong and to prophesy about what's going to be and the, you know, change your ways and the Beis Hamikdash is going to be destroyed and all, you know, isn't that the job of the Navi? And here they're going and they lost their donkeys. They're going to go ask the Navi how to find their donkeys. So the Malbim says, the Navi wants to tell you that, no, this was very normal in those days. That in those days, if you had something you need, like I was saying, you would go, you would give him, you would pay him, and he says if that wasn't the minhag, then why would they be planning to pay him? There must have been the minhag, the custom, and we don't find that ever in the later Nevi'im. We don't find that people are going to ask these little questions and, you know, paying them for their services. So he says the Navi's telling us that there's a difference between the later Nevi'im and what used to be the Roeh, the seer, and because the Navi is called a Navi because of his words and his rebuke from the word Niv Fasayim, the movement of lips. That's where the word Navi comes from, and Hashem sends him to tell people to be a speaker, to rally the people, to encourage, to inspire the people to do tshuva, and to rebuke them, but in the early days there was something called a Roeh, and he was called a Roeh because he would see with Ruach HaKodesh the future, things that would be, and the details of individuals, and in fact, he says that people would run away from the Navi. They didn't want to go. They didn't want a Navi. A Navi is the one who rebukes you. They would try to always. They were more interested in a Roeh, in a seer, someone who could help me, someone who could advise me as to, you know, what path I could choose, and that was normal in those days. So, and that's what the Navi is sort of inserting over here. The Navi is inserting that one that, so we're not surprised by the fact that they're going to a prophet to find out where their donkeys are, that was normal in those days. One last idea that maybe there's some symbolism. We see already some of the mitos of Saul he's worried about his father. He says to the Nair, you know, at this point our father's probably worried about us. Maybe we should go back. So we see these positive mitos in Saul. Also this idea that, you know, he's going after the animals. He's concerned for the animals. So the he references in Orach Chaim, in Harshas Beitze, which maybe you could say there's some symbolism here in Saul, you know, chasing after his donkeys here. The pasuk says, "Lo tiresh rachicha oes miyoni dachim." One cannot see the ox of his brother or his sheep nidachim wandering. Be salam to him and ignore them, turn away from them. Rather, hasev tishivei le'achicha. He should surely return them to his brother. So Orach Chaim says something amazing over here. He says, obviously there's a simple understanding of the pasuk. You see an animal wandering, you should return them to their master. Says the Arachayim that this pasuk is also coming through the Merame Sehinta, the obligation of tochacha, of rebuke, or you could say inspiring, of encouraging others, that there are, you know, there's examples where we find that the tzaddikim are called brothers to Hashem, and the pasuk is telling you, he says, that when you see a shark, when you see an ox, a person who is nimshol kebehemos, right? We have this idea that a person is compared to an animal. He's following his base desires. He's not spiritually refined, let's say. But they're tzon kadoshim. Those people are also tzon kadoshim. They're holy flock. So if you see shor achicha, the shor, the animal of your master, of your brother, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you see people who are like animals and following after their more base desires, but OSAO, but they're also his sheep. They're the flock of Hashem, and they're nidachim, and they're wandering, and they're lost. So do not turn away from them. Rather, hashiv tishivim le'achicha, return them to your brother again, to Hashem, and reach out to them. And so if you see people who are lost, people who need help, people who need to return to Hashem, so the pasuk tells us, hinting, says the Arachayim, to the idea that we should be there to help them. So the mentions this in the context of Saul. Here you have Saul chasing down these lost animals. He says there's a symbolism here to what Saul could be as a leader, that just as he cares about the individual, all the animals, and the lost animals, so too he'll be a leader who will care about the lost people in Klal Yisrael and help them return.